The question of legalized marijuana use will confront the federal government's resistance to recreational pot as a result of a couple of votes this week. Oregon joined Washington State in legalizing pot. So did Washington, D.C., and because D.C. is not a state, and some statehood advocates would say because it is a colony ruled by a Capitol Hill dictatorship, Congress can actually overrule the D.C. pot law. So does the reefer revolution begin on Constitution Avenue all of a sudden? Joining me to discuss this is Ethan Nadelman, who is the executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance. Ethan, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me on, John.
So let's talk about the D.C. thing first, because there are a couple of interesting things nationally here. Does this force the issue? I mean, with the Republicans controlling House and Senate, it would seem to me almost an inescapable temptation for the Republicans to immediately overrule this law. And then suddenly there's a political battle brewing right there in Capitol Hill.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it could, but I think it's unlikely for a few reasons. The first one, John, is that the Washington, D.C. initiative, which won with an incredible 70% on Election Day, it doesn't go as far as Colorado and Washington went 2 years ago, or as Oregon and Alaska did a couple days ago. It doesn't set up a system of taxing and regulating marijuana and allowing it people to buy it in stores. It simply expands the right of decriminalization, essentially, the ability of people to possess and to grow their own. So in that sense, it's not going to be as in Congress's face as one would expect. Now, that said, this initiative was done very much, I wouldn't say in collaboration, but in sort of close coordination with members of the D.C. City Council. And right now, as I understand it, a majority of D.C. City Council members favor a system of legalizing marijuana and taxing and regulating it. So what they basically said to us, normally they don't like ballot initiatives. You know, they feel you know, that they're being overwhelmed by Congress on the one hand. They don't like initiatives on the other. But in this case, they said, look, if you guys can win this with an overwhelming margin, that'll give us the political legitimacy to move forward on tax and regulation, pass some legislation in D.C., and then challenge Congress at that point. I think that's the moment when we'll really see Congress have to make some decisions, because that'll be the moment when they'll be confronted with having legal marijuana outlets in the nation's capital.
Does this confront or actually relieve some tension between the citizens of D.C. and law enforcement, who have always had a problem with the overrepresentation of African Americans in jails and in the sort of arrest reports?
Well, I'll tell you, it was an interesting marijuana initiative in that this was the first one in the country among the many I've been involved in where racial justice and the racial disproportionality of marijuana arrests played a major role, right? So people got galvanized, people got educated. And I think at this point, we're probably going to see the D.C. police really stepping back. I mean, the D.C. City Council passed a pretty good, a very good decriminalization bill earlier this year. This initiative takes it a step further. So I think the cops are still going to try to find ways to, you know, arrest and get their hands on young people, especially young men of color in the nation's capital. But I think we're going to see a little better relationship between the police and young citizens in D.C. than we have in the past.
All right, let's go out west. Do federal border agents patrol the border between Oregon and Washington and try to enforce the crossing of state lines to sell marijuana, since that's the only jurisdiction here?
In fact, I got to tell you, it's sort of funny. One of the things that happened was the Oregonian, which is the leading paper in Oregon and Portland, one of the arguments they used in editorializing in favor of Oregon legalizing marijuana was they said, look, at this point, people are driving from Portland just over the border to Vancouver, Washington, which is, I don't know the area that well, but 15 minutes away or something, half an hour away. Why should Oregonians be paying taxes to Washington State when they buy their marijuana? Why don't they just pay the taxes here? So I think that the Washington-Oregon border has been and is going to be very chill. That's not going to be the issue. I think the only place you're going to see problems is when you start talking about borders with states like Idaho, where there have been reports of the police actually profiling cars with Washington State or Colorado license plates and pulling them over simply because that they have that license plate. It's not been a major issue, but we're hearing some of that going on.
But does the Pacific Northwest become an agricultural center for the production of pot in the same way that illegally, Humboldt County is down in California?
I don't think so. I mean, let's remember, it's not as if we're creating a whole new industry here. What's essentially going on is the transformation of what has been a marijuana industry worth tens of billions of dollars that's been entirely unregulated, underground, oftentimes, with criminal organizations playing a role. And what we're now doing is moving that industry into a legally regulated world where we'll once again have an industry worth tens of billions of dollars, but it will be paying taxes. The criminal element will be increasingly diminished. Consumers will have much better knowledge of what they're getting. So I don't think we're going to see a great boom. What we're going to see is stuff that was previously underground emerging above ground. That's the transformation that we're seeking. That's what we're trying to do here, not to build a new industry, but to stop the ineffective prohibition and the backward criminalization and all the harms of criminalization.
All right, enough of your activism advocacy business right now. How old are you, Ethan?
I am 57.
Okay, how many kids do you have?
One.
All right, so give me some advice here. What do I tell my kids about pot now that it's legal in Alaska, it's legal in D.C., it's legal in Oregon, Washington, Colorado?
Well, John, how old are
you? Is it over? Is it over? My
kid,
four teenagers, pal. Okay.
Okay. So you got to work your way through this teenage thing. Here's my advice to you,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which essentially is the lesson to your kids about marijuana is the same more or less as the message about alcohol, right? Which is that marijuana is not something, people should not be doing this at a young age, right? That if you get involved in this at a very young age, it's much more likely you're going to get in trouble. It's going to screw you up in school and all sorts of things like that. But that if, when you're older, you do it responsibly. Don't do it in a stupid way. Don't do that waking and baking and going to school and think you can learn anything when you're high. Don't get behind the wheel of a car when you're high. And if they say, well, the fact that they made it legal, Dad, doesn't that mean it's okay now? You say, wait a second. You know something? Cigarettes aren't legal. Doesn't mean they're okay. Alcohol's legal for adults. Doesn't mean it's okay for teenagers. This law on marijuana, it's for 21 and over.
Ethan, thanks a lot. You've performed a public service, at least for me.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much.
Ethan Nadelman is the executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.